Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Mike Kalameko from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today's episode is going to be really, really fun. I've got Nolan Meredith in, also known as the Oyster Baron Von Clam Man of Long Island. So we're going to be talking bivalves. We're going to talk about oysters. We're going to talk about clams as animals because people don't think of them as actually being animals. They usually get kind of stuck on the fact that it's kind of a meal or a food source. So that's being said, let's get started. Nolan, thank you so much for coming into the studio today. It's good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. It's this is really fun. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm just thrilled because Nolan and I met at a party and started talking, and it was like, wow, this guy knows a lot about this stuff. So I was like, you have to come on the show. So thanks for schlepping out on a crappy day from the Hamptons because it's really super appreciated.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start at, you know, really stupid question. What are oysters?
All right. Well, I mean, you got oysters, clams, mussels. I mean, they're bivalves. They've been around since the beginning of time, and you know, really, they haven't changed much. I mean, they're like the original source. You know, I mean, that's where we came from.
And have they evolved a ton since, or like ancient oysters, pretty much the same?
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty much the same as they were millions and millions of years ago.
And do they exist like everywhere all over the world?
Yeah, they're everywhere. Warm climates, cold climates, everywhere.
And how smart is the average bivalve?
Well, you know, they do have some intelligence. Oysters, not so much. They pretty much just stay where they're at, and they don't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Clams are a little more intelligent, and they'll actually, you know, move around or dig to protect themselves from the freezing. They'll dig 3 feet down into the mud.
Wow.
In the winter.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do they go dormant at that point, or what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, well, the warmer the temperature, the more they metabolize, and then they'll breed.
Mm.
And then in the cold, they'll protect themselves and kind of, you know, they'll still feed a little bit, but not like they would in the spring or summer.
Okay. And so, like, what does a bivalve do all day?
They pump. They pump it good. You know, I mean, as any good clam should, right? They will filter water, and they filter a lot. One clam, one oyster is more so because they're on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
An oyster will filter 50 gallons, one oyster, 50 gallons of water a day.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's impressive.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And so are clams as good, or are they like a little slower?
They're a little bit different because they're, you know, they're in the mud, so they'll actually consume some of the mud.
Mm-hmm.
With the water, but they're just as beneficial. I mean, they're consuming mud and just, you know, sediment.
Mm-hmm.
and processing it. So,
and so, like, I know that clams are basically filters, or oysters are filters. Are clams and mussels filters too?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're all pumping, and they're all pumping sediment with mud with water. Oysters are more on the surface, so they're going to filter more of the water. But
mm-hmm.
but filtering the sediment is just as important. I mean, to keep the bay alive.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, without any life in the bay, I mean, it just becomes a dead water, and that's happened all over the world. There's dead water everywhere. Nothing will grow.
Wow.
But to correct that, you got to start somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be clams and oysters and mussels and bivalves. I mean, that's going to be the base level to restart the ecosystem.
That's amazing, and we're going to come back to that because it's definitely really, really interesting on that. What's the average lifespan of a bivalve?
I mean, if they're lucky. I mean, Mother Nature wants to kill them 1,000 ways that we'll get into later on, but... I mean, your average little neck, if you know about clams, is little necks, top necks, cherries, chowders. You know, for a little neck, you're looking at 3 years.
Really?
You know, and for an for a decent size oyster, that's, you know, 2 years at best.
Wow.
And, you know, they can go 15 years.
Really?
Sure. A chowder clam, you know, a really nice...
Like those big ones?
The size of your fist chowder clam will be 15 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
God, I had no idea. And so how old do they need to be to be sold on the market as food?
Well...
Is it like an age or is it a size thing? Like, do they have limitations on that?
Yeah, it's going to be a size thing. There's definitely regulation, thank God, because, you know, if you start taking seed and people want the smallest clam, they think it's sweeter, whatever,
yeah.
You know, you destroy the environment, right? So you got to give these things a chance to breed, and that's why there's some regulation.
And, I mean, is there any truth to that, that, like, the smaller the clam, the sweeter it is?
Not really.
Okay.
No. I mean, it might be easier to put in your mouth. but size, you know, I guess in this case, you
size
know.
Matters.
But I mean, I brought some top necks and I think they're just as delicate and delicious as little necks, you know. I mean, they're a fantastic size clam.
And I'm excited about that. We're going to have some guests after the break that are kind of come in and we're going to sample some of these. So let's talk about breeding real quick. I know it's complicated, but like, how do they multiply?
Oh, well, it's pretty cool. I mean, they definitely love each other.
Yeah.
And they like to be with each other and spawn. I mean, the more of them together at the same time, the more chances of them actually having success in mm-hmm. when they breed. And, you know, clams and oysters will breed at different times, but generally from June till August, they're just you know, putting their love in the water.
All right.
You know? So, yeah.
And like, out of what are the odds of them like actually successfully breeding?
Yeah, they can successfully breed, but it's the survival rate in nature is very low. Everything wants to kill them as babies. I mean, you got fish, you got bacteria. I mean, you got sediment, you have all kinds of pollution even. I mean, it never ends. Everything wants to kill them. So you have about a survival rate of 1,000 out of 150 million. So that's where farming and aquaculture is so important.
Yeah.
I mean, every step of the way, we're keeping these girls alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we don't take care of our babies, like they're not going to make it, you know?
And so, like, but what you guys are doing is different than, like, a fish farm in terms of, like, you don't have, like, this man-made pond that you were in there and doing filtration as well. Like, you're doing this in the actual ocean, right?
Yeah, and it's really, it's more economical to be more natural.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an oyster farm, and people think of farmed, I mean, and they're rightly so. I mean, farmed fish is, I don't consider fish.
Yeah,
unless
either.
It's done naturally. And they're... To feed 1 million oysters when they're full grown would just not be, it's just retarded.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're babies and they're, you know, less than a quarter of an inch, even then you want to be pumping natural water.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do it at the right time where the temperature of the water has natural plankton in it to feed the babies.
Mm.
And if you had to do that with dried plankton, forget it. You're talking thousands and thousands of dollars, and it just goes in and out. And it, you know, so it's nice. It's you know, you're working with the synergistic Mother Nature and timing.
Yeah.
You know, when the plankton is there, when the temperature of the water is there. Oysters generally start feeding at 50 degrees.
Wow.
And until then, they're not really doing much.
Really?
And plankton will start to grow, thank God, before then.
Yeah, yeah.
So there'll be food in the water, and by 50 degrees, the oysters wake up, and they're like, ah, time to eat.
Wow. So I wanted to talk to you. We talked a little bit before the show regarding the environmental impacts of clams and oysters. So let's talk about that. What's their story with that?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, well, the basic filtering that they do is pretty impressive. I mean, 50 gallons a day. So if you look at my oyster farm, I've got 2 million oysters growing in the water.
Wow.
And, you know, it's you multiply 2 million oysters times 50, and that's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water.
You know, I mean, it's
like the whole ocean. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't have a
calculator. It's a hell of a lot of water, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mouth sucks. Don't even worry about it. It's all good. It's a lot of water.
Yeah, so, you know, they're pumping, and, you know, clams too, and even mussels. I mean, any bivalve is going to be pumping that water,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to denitrify the water. They're going to take the acid out of the water. They're going to bind it with calcium as calcium carbonate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what shells are made of. So if you look at air pollution, the largest scrubber of CO2 in the world is the ocean, is the salt water.
Mm.
And the carbonic acid and it gets trapped in the water, and they take the CO2 out of the air, and then bivalves will affix the calcium to that and, you know, basically take carbon dioxide out of the air.
It's pretty amazing.
And the less of that in the water, the more can be absorbed, and then the more can be trapped. But if there's no oysters and clams in the water, we're screwed.
Totally. So this actually affects like the entire planet too.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at a third of the weight of an oyster or a clam in the shell is going to be carbon.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
Well, calcium carbonate. So then if you want to break it down by the molecules, it's a little bit less than that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So they're super, super important.
Yeah. Well, they deacidify the water too. You know, they take the acid out, and that allows fish and other, you know, seaweed and sponge and, you know, more life in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then also phosphates and, you know, that everything that we're putting as mankind grows,
right.
You know, we sediment with all the runoff, building roads, fertilizing. I mean, what we're doing to the environment just by trying to live, we're killing off the ability for it to heal itself.
Yeah.
So we have to have these oysters. We have to have these clams to correct it.
It's, you know, it's so amazing. It's something about this show, or, you know, I bring in all these like specific animals and stuff, and then you find out the actual purpose. It's absolutely amazing. We are going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Nolan Meredith all about clams and bivalves and oysters. We'll be back in like a minute and a half.
Clams are in the house.
Hey, hey.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind. From healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
So we are back. I am talking to Oyster Baron von Clam Man, big bivalve dude out in the Hamptons. No
one. What's up?
And I have got Patrick Martins, the founder of Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio in the studio, as well as Alexis McLaughlin of The Main Course. So welcome, guys.
My animal instinct tells me this is the best show on the network.
Oh, you're so good to me, Patrick. Thank you.
I'm having a good
that.
Time. This is fun.
So, you got this guy working. You guys must be going out because, I mean, you had this man who's like been shucking oysters for you for a long time. Ooh, I'm about to eat
this
one.
This is the first one, dude, so I haven't even tried these, so... And so we have Patrick and Alexis have come in to sample these babies and see what they think.
Salty. Very, very good.
Wow, these are amazing. Yum.
It's like mother's milk.
The texture is incredible.
Oh, it's pretty tasty. I mean, You know, there's a lot of talk about oysters and clams being aphrodisiacs, and it's true. I did the research.
Really? I can see by the way you're standing in the studio that you it is an aphrodisiac. That's it.
Well, I mean, if I face towards you, it might be, you know, I don't want to embarrass
you. Just don't
you,
face the window. Don't face the window.
We've been eating oysters.
So, Nolan, tell us how you started this whole thing. Oh. The sounds you're hearing in the background is him actually shucking some clams and oysters, so. And we need to give one to Liz, our engineer, because that's
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so
I'll bring one in. Too.
All right, there you go.
That would just be mean for her to listen to this and be, like, drooling in the corner and not get to sample this stuff.
All right, well, before we get into how I all started, I think we should, you know, just finish up what, you know, the aphrodisiac aspects of clams and
oysters. Yeah, let's do it.
They are sexual, you know, and basically, you got a lot of, here we go, that's better, I got my headphones on, I can hear myself. So they got mineralized zinc, and that has a, dilates your capillaries. And
oh.
It helps blood flow better. And the fact that it's mineralized, it's bioavailable. You absorb it right away.
Totally.
And you've also got enzymes that help with the absorption and amino acids that trigger the release of testosterone.
Hey.
And in men and women, that will heighten your right? sexual desire.
Bring on the oysters.
It's absolutely true. There is no doubt about it. I mean, you eat a bunch of oysters and clams, you should be going at least once or twice. You
know? Awesome. Hey. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe three times. Who
the
knows?
Mighty oyster. Yeah. This is good. Thanks.
Can I have another one?
Well, then I won't be able to talk. I promise you, we have a bunch. I promise.
My wife is coming in like an hour, so I could use, a dozen?
Well, I hope that she does. But I will promise that I'll open up all the clams and oysters I brought tonight. That's not no doubt.
Yay!
I mean, that'll be my pleasure.
Awesome.
So, all right. So now you wanted to know how I got started.
Yeah. Tell us a story.
Well, I mean, I guess I came back from a wild time. I mean, I was certainly tried to be professional and then said, fuck it. And then, you know, went and was a DJ in South America and then came home. And, you know, being a DJ on tour was not sustainable living. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but if I didn't stop when I did, I don't know. We probably wouldn't be having this interview. But yeah, so I came home. I needed something to do. And all my buddies I grew up with are, you know, the clammers. And I used to work on the boats as a deckhand. And I wasn't very good at it. And when I went back on the boats, they're like, yeah, you still suck at it. But they're like, you have a big mouth and you definitely just go sell it, man. Go sell our clams. Get us a better price. And since I did that, we're like on average like 5 cents more per clam.
Awesome.
Since I started, you know, I was like the new buyer that pissed off all the other buyers. They hate me now.
How many producers do you represent?
Well, in Oyster Bay, it's an interesting thing that we have going there. We have the strongest association of baymen, and the baymen are the guys on the boats. It's called NOBA. You can look it up on Facebook.
I'm sorry, I cut out. Did you say gay man?
No, they will kick, they will kick your ass. That ain't even funny. I mean,
I'm sorry. It sounded like gay men.
These guys handle clams, bro. They handle clams. They, you know,
they're mollusks. They work with mollusks. Yeah, well,
be careful with that one, bro. They are fierce. They don't like, you know, they're fishermen. They're salty pirate fishermen, and they don't like that gaze. You know, I mean, whatever. Let's keep going forwards.
Yeah, NOBA.
NOBA, right. So North Oyster Bay Baymen Association. And
I'm sorry, you know, Baymen, right?
Baymen. Yeah. Baymen.
Sorry. Yes. I'm new. I deal with meat. I don't deal with fish.
That's true.
I mean, I'm sure there is another association of gay men, and that's fine, you know, but
competition for
the baymen they're cool people, you know. But so we're gay men too, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone's good. I'm okay with that.
Anybody's fine. So, all right, let's, so
with
basically,
NOBA, what's the story?
They are a lot of hardworking guys that have families and they can make a living on a boat by themselves. And it's a very important part of, you know, any town on Long Island, really. Any town that's on the water that has, you know, rights to get a permit to dig on their own. I mean, these people send their kids to college. And having clams and oysters in the water for them to do that is really important. I mean, it's a a staple in the community.
It's amazing.
These guys make good money, and they work their asses off to go out in the freezing weather, you know.
So how many sellers will they sell to?
Mainly each boat, each guy will choose a buyer based on price, based on availability, in the summer, ice pickup. I mean, there's a lot of
based
different
factors.
Based
on how good his weed is. You're like, the weed bring over on the ship is better.
No, all the guys have, our town has the best clams and oysters on Long Island. I mean, we're lucky that way. I don't know why. Perhaps it's, that's like the different flavors you have in oysters and clams. It's what they eat and what's around. And our town has just got some amazing products. I mean, it lasts longer than anything else.
So are you finding a different flavor between the ones in Montauk and the ones in Oyster Bay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it certainly changes from bay to bay. I mean, you can have one side of the bay that gets more of the sound water and then another part of the bay that's more in the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And the oysters will taste different, look different even. They'll have different colors on them. Sure.
Do you ever find pearls?
I have not, but I have seen, let's say, the beginnings of a black pearl.
Oh, cool.
But it's usually embedded in the shell.
Yeah.
And that, the Indians would chop that out, and that would be worth something. Mm-hmm.
That's called merwar, the terroir of the sea. Merwar.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah.
Merwar.
A little purple, black pearl kind of thing,
Pretty. I got one once in an oyster bar in the city, and it was tiny. It almost broke my tooth, but I still have it. It's really cute. It's a tiny little thing.
That is amazing. I mean, so it would be interesting to look at if people live longer eating so much fish, because I know in places like Japan and stuff where they do eat a lot of fish and vegetables, they have a much longer lifespan.
Well, you're looking at omega-3s and 6s and 9s. You got your zinc, so you're fucking more. It's like you're definitely working harder. You got some good nutrients getting pumped into you. Whereas if you're eating crap,
fast food, Checkers.
Nah. I mean, the best hangover cure I know of is, a clam. I mean, you eat a clam in the morning and eat two or three more, and, you feel it right away. The salt, you get the salt in you, the taste of the ocean, and you're like, fuck yeah, I'm ready.
Ready.
Yeah.
Well, the ocean has an amazing regenerative powers. My stepfather used to sniff in salt water when he was congested, and he would cry for a little bit because of the pain, but it 100% would fix it.
Wow.
100% of the time.
Yeah.
2-3 times.
Yeah.
All the way up into the brain, but yeah, it works.
To the dome.
Amazing.
Take a clam down, boat to throat,
Oh my God! Boat to throat—that is a movement.
Yeah, well, that's what we use. I base my business on boat to throat technology.
Can you create a website? Can you go buy that domain name, Liz, right now and gift it to this man for coming up with that?
Yeah, well, there's Dock to Dish, but I think boat to throat sounds a little more exciting.
Yeah, I like boat to throat. No, it's more.
Well, Dock to Dick, from what you've been telling us about.
There you go.
This aphrodisiac.
Stay on the subject. There you go. That's better.
You get this man in trouble. I'm going to go back home and get his ass kicked.
No, they love me.
They obviously do. They pick you after all these guys. Everybody's probably promising them that they can sell their stuff around. But, for them to entrust that, I, in turn, am entrusted by certain chefs, or farmers, to distribute their stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's really just based on freshness and what you're willing to do to keep it fresh. I mean, I turn over a lot of my product to other wholesalers, and that's just, after 4 days, I'm turning it over because I want to sell my restaurants the freshest stuff there is.
Yeah.
And not to say that 4 days makes a difference. Really, it doesn't. On my products, because it's done by hand, and believe it or not, it makes a world of difference. Mm. You have a company in our town that I won't mention because of legal reasons, but they have been grandfathered in, and they use antiquated harvesting, dredging.
Mm.
Their clams last 5 days and then they're dead. And they crack the shells. And
if he did that, he would be living in a van.
That's true. No
kidding,
right?
By the river.
Yeah. So
eating government issued cheese.
The guy's doing it by hand. I mean, this is sustainable harvest. You're not destroying the environment. You're using a rake that's maybe a foot wide, maybe 2 feet wide, depending on the guy that's pulling on it. But, it leaves a lot of the environment intact. Whereas the dredgers, you look at what's underwater, forget it. It's dead. Really? Dead zone. There's nothing. Just mud piles.
Yeah, that's an example of where grandfathering is not good.
Right.
Sometimes wood shelves for a cure master and hams, that's good.
Yeah.
Being allowed to bottom trawl, that's not good.
Yeah,
that's
no. Really scary. They suck up everything and spit out, just shit. You know, and nothing else will grow on it. And that's where, the environment doesn't have a chance to heal itself.
Yeah.
So how does the regular customer, the regular, listener have the ability to buy what you have access to? Where do they have to go?
Well, I mean, like, there's so many distributors that sell clams. And you really just got to find the one that's keeping it fresh.
But, how would they buy literally from your company?
From my company, I would find
like
you.
Yorkers,
I don't advertise. I don't market. I don't really need to. It's all face-to-face. And
so you sell to the chefs directly.
Yeah, I walk in with a handful of clams, and I'm like, just, get it in your mouth. And they're like, who the fuck are you? And I'm like, just get it in your mouth, buddy, and then we'll talk.
You got the whole local thing going for you, Montauk.
The Montauk it's a farm. But I have some local guys out there that pick oysters for me, and, they have great stuff, too. I mean, the wild product is unique in itself because it has a variety of size.
About your colleagues and cohorts on the West Coast dealing with, all of the Japan fallout from the nuclear thing? I mean, I've heard some questions about the Pacific. Have you heard that?
Yeah. I guess it all depends on what you want to believe as far as what's a safe level of...
what is it, mercury or what is it?
I think it's
radiation.
No, I think
it?
It's like iodine number 99 or some shit. But
awesome.
But there's, who's to say what's a safe level of something that could kill you at an unsafe level? I mean, who knows?
But does the East Coast have stuff going on like that too, and we just don't hear about it, or you think it's all the same? What do you honestly feel as a fisherman?
I really believe that, radioactivity is pretty serious, and nobody really understands it. But they say that certain things are safe because nobody's died yet.
Right.
Yeah.
But as a fisherman, you want to keep it fresh. I mean, the fresher it is, you want the love of the ocean, the taste of the ocean, and you want that freshness. You don't want people tasting some nastiness, and you certainly don't want people getting sick. I mean, that just...
Oh, my God, that could really...
You would have to eat a lot of oysters to get sick, but still, I mean...
No, you could eat just one. It could kill you if you eat the wrong oyster.
Especially if it's making this sound.
Yeah, if it glows in the dark, I mean, that might not be so good.
I actually spoke to someone that you used to work with, Vincent Gazzara.
Yeah.
And so he gave me a quote about you, and I want to get this in before this show ends.
Any relationship to Ben Gazzara?
I have no idea.
Probably.
I have no idea. Do you know?
What?
If he's related to Ben Gazzara?
No, I don't. But
so like John Voight.
Vin is like John a brother, Voight. Man. I've known him forever.
Well, what he had to say about you was dedication, drive, consistency, and innocent passion. The only way there is to truly describe Nolan James when describing his seafood business and his work style. I've worked in restaurants for 15 years in both NYC and Miami. Never have I seen such rare qualities together in one individual who deals with all aspects of the small shellfish industry. It's always been a pleasure to work with Nolan, and I see his blossoming business soaring to great heights over the next several years.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, man. I definitely appreciate it. It's nice to hear that.
I've always been told the opposite.
About me?
I've been told that the faster the food spoils, the less you can trust the distributor. But I'm about to change my philosophy on that because of Nolan.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
but no, I'm joking. But they always say, watch out for the fish guy. Meanwhile, meat guys, you can kind of trust them. Cheese people, they improve with age.
I think it has a lot to do with just damaging the shell. When you're dredging, you're damaging the shell, and it just dies. It's been traumatized. The clam is like, fuck you, I want to die,
Yeah.
But you do it by hand, and you're
suicide
gently...
Suicide clams.
Yeah,
that's
a
story.
You're coercing
them.
That's the name of a band.
You're coercing them by hand, You're like, come on, baby, let's go.
You pull your bivalves. How long will they survive safely, before they'll poison you outside of the sea?
Yeah, well, as long as you're keeping them good, and that means... anything over 40 degrees and bacteria will start to grow that could kill you, right? So you
but
want
in the to, right conditions.
You want there's control. The DEC does a great job. They really do regulate, and the guys definitely follow follow the rules. And we didn't have any illnesses this summer that we know about. Whereas the other company had like five.
Oh, God.
No, but how long? I mean, if you really trusted yourself, I mean, your stuff is the best and it would last the longest. So can it go 8-10 days in the right environment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, once
off the record.
Absolutely on the record. I mean, you'll get 3 weeks out of any oyster or clam done by hand.
Holy cow.
What are the right conditions for keeping them?
Well, oysters you can have.
Like, do they need to be dry but cold?
Yeah, you can't freeze them, right?
Clams don't like to be on ice. Fresh water will kill them. Ice on oysters is good, but if they sit in water, fresh water will kill them too.
So they got to be elevated.
Yeah, generally speaking, you want to keep clams dry and cold, right? Whereas oysters, you know, if they're loose, they'll open up and dry out. So you want to have like keep them in a bag tied tight, mm-hmm. and they'll stay good for, you know, 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and you could eat that. They're, you know, I've eaten clams that are, believe it or not, I've eaten clams that are 5 weeks old.
Whoa! Yeah.
But in the winter, they're more dormant, so they're not feeding. The metabolism is down. They're already stabilized.
Yeah. Whereas they're like Harry Houdini underwater. You know, they're like lowered their breathing. No, it's true. By the way, our pork chops, the USDA, is like more than 2 hours. I've had pork chops like fall behind the dishwasher 2-3 weeks later. Still fine. Dirty, but very fine. No, I mean, you know, people are always trying to get you to be an alarmist. Throw stuff out and it creates waste. When really you should trust your nose and your mouth.
Yeah.
And that's the same with your stuff, right?
But you should know the product, too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that with, let's say, the company that does dredging.
Right. I would never do that with a commodity company.
You have to know your product, and you got to know where it's coming from, and you got to have experience with it. I mean, you know, it's great. You know, the guys that are out there digging, they really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they learned from their elders. How to dig, how to feel the ocean, how to gauge the tide, how to gauge the moon, and how to use the wind, and how to set a sail dredge, you know, how to set a sail to catch the wind or the tide.
That was so poetic. My arousal, I don't know, was that the oyster or was that the beauty of the poetry? Yeah. I don't know. It was one of the two.
But it's interesting, too, because, like, I mean, both of you, Nolan and Patrick, it's like in order to make good food production, you have to go back to the old school methods.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certain things don't need to be so complicated. And, you know, sometimes when you get things too efficient, you're putting people out of work and you're dropping the price. And okay, you're making all the money, but everybody else is fucked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now fucked the whole quality of it. And that's just unnecessary.
They're good people doing the new way and they're bad people doing it the old
way. That's true, too.
I think it is really just the quality of the merchant. And, you know, each generation has a few names, family names, like a Nolan or a Harriet Martins or a McLaughlin.
Well, put it this way.
They carry with them legitimacy. Yeah. And they could have a bad day, but then you overlook it because they can sustain it for years.
Yeah, but the bigger the business, unfortunately, the more profits you're concerned about and the less you're going to care about, you know, the quality. I mean, it's an acceptable quality or it's an acceptable harvest. I mean, you start to cut corners.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys on the boats, they are doing the best that they can absolutely do. And you are getting the... You could taste the difference.
Yeah.
Boat to throat. You
know, yeah, boat to throat, baby.
Boat to throat.
Get it in you. You know?
Is there anything else you want to tell everybody? We are sadly running out of time.
Website?
No, I don't have any website.
Frequently asked questions.
You could check me out on Facebook, you know? Definitely, you know, the farm in Montauk is coming. I got the MTK Lady Killers. And that is, a custom oyster. You know, I use... a technology that my partner and I, Eric Angstrom, we've kind of come up with together, and we're creating an oyster with a really deep cup.
Cool.
Lots of liqueur.
Cool.
And just a fantastic oyster.
A deep cup.
Deep cup.
Yeah, oh, I thought you said deep cup.
It's going to be a deep cup, girl.
Yeah. I mean, it's
that's an oyster.
There
it's
you go.
It's delicious.
That brine is mine.
Boat to throat, baby. Boat to throat, okay?
Love it. It's been a pleasure. I really did have a good time. This was fantastic.
I had so much fun, and it went so quick. And you are going to look on Facebook for Nolan James Meredith, also known as Oyster Baron Von Clam Man. And, I mean, if you go out to Montauk, you can probably harass enough people to find you at some point.
I do get harassed, yeah.
Trolling with Nolan.
Hey, we got a new show. Here we go. So thank you guys for coming in. Patrick, thank you so much for stopping by. Same as Alexis. It was really, really fun. Nolan, like I said, thanks for trudging out from the Hamptons on a really crappy day. I will be back next week with a brand new episode. And until then, have a great one and take care. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.